Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Happy Friday to you. Man, I woke up this morning. There was snow all over the ground in Austin, Texas. Okay, it was ice. But this snow to me, I'll take it. This is a veritable winter wonderland. Not much compared to probably the most of you. Well, it was little enough that it was purely enjoyable. And not a crisis like it seems to be everywhere else where it's snowing in America right now. All right, well, anyway, whatever. Enough about the weather. Let's talk with Sheldon Richmond. He's the vice president of the Future Freedom Foundation. And he's got a couple of new articles here at FFF.org for talking about the surveillance state lives. And today's article, Warfare, Welfare, Corporate State. All of a piece. And this is another and different response to this liberal hack who wrote this thing in the New Republic. You might have heard about it, where Walentz is his name, and he attacked Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, and Glenn Greenwald as not trustworthy for a good liberal Democrat because of what horrible right-wing libertarians they are. And which, of course, they're not, and which, of course, is hilarious. But anyway, so there's been quite a few different responses to this, but I really liked yours, Sheldon. So, first of all, I probably, well, as George W. Bush would say, shorthanded it. Why don't you go ahead and, first of all, describe the article we're critiquing here a little bit better your own way before we get too far into your critique.
Okay. Well, Sean Walentz is a professor of history at Princeton. He's been around a while. He's he's a baby boomer. He considers himself, I guess, a liberal in the sort of modern American sense. But apparently, his history would show him to be a Cold War liberal. He was not a McGovernite liberal. So he backs a muscular foreign policy, which he sees as going hand in hand with the welfare state, although all the stuff he likes. So his concern about Assange and Glenn Greenwald and Edward Snowden are that these guys have a hidden agenda. Well, kind of not so hidden, because he then finds things on the record which supposedly reveals the hidden agenda. So they're not so hidden. So not only do these guys want to bring attention to NSA, quote, abuses, which Walentz is willing to admit there were some, they want to do more than that. They want to basically get rid of the whole surveillance state, which we need to fight our enemies, according to Walentz, but they want to go further than that. They stand against the whole liberal project, meaning, again, modern American liberal project, which means the whole welfare state, everything else. So he's telling his fellow progressives, or whatever he called himself, don't embrace these guys, even if you like some of what they're saying about the NSA, because under the surface, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Underneath, they have this whole agenda which will bring down everything we know and love. So he's trying to warn them off, and don't see these guys as heroes. They're bad guys. They're trying to undermine confidence in the government that we know and love. That's hilarious because, of course,
Greenwald is actually, never mind his, obsession with the Bill of Rights, he's a pretty conventional liberal, it seems like, and I've read him for a long, long time, other than, the Dick Cheney emergency issues, but when it comes to just the normal questions of governance, he's a pretty conventional Democrat, come on.
No, I agree. On Twitter, during the debate over the Affordable Care Act, he was making pro-ACA statements on Twitter. So I agree with you. He's He's not. In fact,
tears in his eyes when Obama was elected that night and everything. He was all caught up with that stuff with the rest of them. He's, you know, he's Salon.com kind of guy. And that's not, I'm not saying that's bad about him. I think that's, it makes him exceptional to me that he cares that much about the Bill of Rights and that little about fitting in with partisan politics. But that doesn't make his politics that far outside of the conventions of the ideas and policies of the Democrats, just their little in-group, you know?
Well, Lynch is trying to present to the readers this so-called evidence, perhaps, that that Greenwald is not everything he represents himself to be. So he has him. He has these damning facts about him. What are the damning facts? Well, he's hung out at the Cato Institute and has said, you know, I like the Cato guys. And he actually went, and this gets really home, he points out that Greenwald once spoke at a Future Freedom Foundation conference. I believe you might have been there, Scott. And he identifies the Future Freedom Foundation as a right-wing institution, which is hilarious. As I say in the article, this indicates either the level of research he did or his sense of humor. Not sure which. Mm-hmm. So he thinks he's got all these little indications that Greenwald really is, leaning heavily libertarian. But you're right. You can agree with you could be for the Affordable Care Act, still like a lot of what Cato has done, or and you could come to an FFF conference on civil liberties and war. Wilentz just is using such a blunt instrument to support his preconceived notions and to get people to just not embrace, not to see these people as heroes. That he's almost willing to say anything. It's a pretty silly article when you get right down to it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And what's funny is I've talked with Glenn Greenwald about this kind of thing for years and years on this show about the realignment. And the realignment is not making liberals and conservatives, somehow tricking them into being libertarians. It's basically just hoping, I mean, from my point of view as a libertarian, it's hoping to influence them to prioritize their libertarian instincts on the left and the right and make those the things that they're more concerned about, like peace and freedom. There's a very right-wing argument for peace and very limited government. And I think there's a very left-wing argument for peace and a very limited government.
Yeah.
And I think if we can have, instead of having John McCain, the liberal Republican, and Barack Obama, the conservative Democrat, as the center, if we had Sheldon Richmond as the center, where, you know, purist anarchism, purist abolitionism, purist against everything-ism as the center, and then we're accentuating the best of the left and right and getting them to prioritize stopping the worst things that the best of us are against the most, you know, should be against the most. And then, so that doesn't mean that liberals or conservatives have to stop being liberals or conservatives. It just means they need to get good on the things that liberals and conservatives are best on, you know, when they're, you know what hell I'm trying to say.
Look,
I'm not saying
Wilentz is hysterical because he phrases everything in a way that's supposed to scare people off. So Greenwald is indicted for associating with people, as Wilentz might put it, you know, on the extreme left and the extreme right. Another way to put that, however, is that there are anti-authoritarians on what Wilentz is calling the extreme left and the extreme right. Maybe there's a problem with the political, the way we define the spectrum, if this is the case. And Greenwald has, to some extent, made common cause with anti-authoritarians of all types. Well, I hope to do that myself. Tell me what's wrong with that. The other thing is he tries to make him out to be a Ron Polian, and just need to read his stuff to know that he never, and Justin Raimondo pointed this out in his article, which I linked to in mine, he never endorsed Ron Paul. What he did was chide progressives for not even being willing to concede that Ron Paul was saying good things about war, peace, and civil liberties, and the Bill of Rights. And in other words, and asking them, where are your priorities? I remember a great column he did, back probably when he was still with Salon, saying, look, when Bush was in power, you guys thought war, peace, and civil liberties were the top priorities, you know, nothing more important. Now that Obama's in there, you think those things are way down on the list. because you won't even give Ron Paul the time of day when he still thinks those are the top priorities. That was a brilliant piece of analysis by Greenwald. Wilentz totally lost on Wilentz. There's just something wrong with Greenwald because he's hanging out with people that Wilentz wants to place either on, you know, on the extreme left or the extreme right. It's a totally dishonorable piece of work.
Well, and the thing is, too, and it's been round. There's some pretty funny articles and some pretty great takedowns of it. But,
I linked to some good stuff. There was very good leftist criticism of Wilentz, and I linked to two things. So people want to find them, they could just find my article at ff.org by Peter Fraze, I think it is, and Henry Farrell, I believe.
Yeah.
At Crooked Timber.
I know what I was going to say. One of the things that Justin brings up is that. Just how there's sort of been a rash of these going along. I saw at FFF today where there's an episode of Tom Wood's show where he's interviewing Jacob Hornberger, president of FFF, about an article at Alternet about how, oh, the libertarians would just have all of the poor and weak starve and die in the street and that kind of thing. And Justin points out how there's been a whole bunch of these. Michael Lind has really taken time out at Salon.com to attack us, and Alternet, and of course there's Ames and all those guys. And seems like what's going on here is the liberals are really scared of all of a sudden libertarianism when it's not ignored, and it becomes part of the conversation. They completely freak out, and their idea is that, you know, all curious, college-aged, young, open-minded people ought to be liberal Democrats like them, or at least liberal progressive somethings like them. And they're frightened that we're like luring them away with our consistent advocacy of individual liberty across the board, you know?
Right. Now,
it's not making
what
so
I
much sense,
is,
Sheldon. You're pissing them off.
Well, I am, and I hope I am. A lot of other people are. But what I tried to show at the end is that Wilentz, there's a sense in which Wilentz is right, but he doesn't understand it. It is true that if you attack the national security state, you are attacking the whole thing. I don't know what Snowden, Assange, and Greenwald would say to this. They may disagree with me. But I think that's why it's called all of a piece. That these are three interlocking parts: the welfare state, the warfare state, and the corporate state. And so I think an attack on one is an attack on all. So. Wilentz unwittingly stumbles and, you know, onto the truth. Wonder of wonders.
Well, yeah, and you say it well, too, that, you know, the welfare state amounts to a bribe to shut up about the corporate welfare warfare state. That's what this is really about. I mean, come on, Alexander Hamilton founded this thing. It's a fascist combine, man, just like in the World of the Cuckoo's Nest.
Look, welfare programs begin with Queen Elizabeth, and I don't mean Queen Elizabeth II. And it was a way to keep the poor and the unemployed and from vagrancy that might end up turning into revolution. So it was always a form of control. There's a very good book called Regulating the Poor, written by left-wingers, Piven and Cloward. It's still worth looking at. It's a couple decades old, more than a couple. But very good analysis of how welfare waxes and wanes depending on the state of the economy. And the concern of the officials that the people who are vulnerable to capitalism or state capitalism, whatever you want to call it, they don't want them getting upset and creating strife. So they buy them off. It's a way to take the people's mind off what's really wrong with the system and how it needs to be changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and in this day and age, there's always the direct, absolute example, like it's a political cartoon in real life where George Bush literally sends you $300 in the mail, no matter who you are. Everybody gets $300 for their dividend for letting him invade Iraq. Like, what the hell is that? You know what I mean? Where it's that obvious. They're like, here's your payoff. Shut up. And, you know, here's another worse one. I went to Camp Casey in the summer of 2005 to support the Cindy Sheehan thing and do a little bit of pseudo-journalism and whatever up there. And I interviewed a soldier who was at that point, I don't know, maybe he wasn't AWOL, but he was just, you know, on leave. But he was going back because his thing was they gave him all this money for college and he kind of already spent it, some on college and some on living while he was at college. And he owes him $50,000. So he's going back to war. And there he was at Camp Casey, totally believing in the anti-war thing and not no longer believing in the war at all. But he'd gotten his giant welfare check and cashed it in advance. Oops. And so now he owes him his blood.
You know, I think getting back to your earlier point, I think it's very interesting, and this bears watching, that people like Wilentz are concerned that there's a convergence going on between the truly radical left, not the ones that have long ago been co-opted, and anti-authoritarians, on the right and the libertarians, that they're finding common ground against this state that we're living under. And there seems to be panic going on that these people are finding each other, and maybe as a result, a coherent, and I would think, libertarian version of this of a combination of their worldviews ending up in a truly libertarian amalgamation of ideologies will be formidable in opposing this monster. That's what they seem worried. I mean, they're the ones who are acting worried. Maybe they have good reason to be worried.
Yeah, I mean, ideologically anyway, it is, the split is becoming much more, and they've made it this way with the state that they've built, the empire that they've built, that the division more is the authoritarians versus the anti-authoritarians. I don't know if you ever saw that speech I gave at the Ron Paul thing in 2012 there, where I said that he ought to keep running with Dennis Kucinich as his running mate, and they could be the Democratic Republicans and insist that Obama and Romney run together, and they would be the war party, and then we'll have the real division how it should be. The people who love the IRS and the people who love Homeland Security and who love foreign empire, they can go and vote for Obama and Romney and get droned, and everybody who cares at all about the Bill of Rights can support Paul and Kucinich. And, it seemed like, Paul is always willing to compromise.
I call that the great division between the socialists and the statists. That should be the big division. Those who trust society and those who only trust the state.
Yeah, no one will ever get what you mean by that with the word socialist in there, but I know what you mean.
I'm explaining it. Look, one of the high points of my TV viewing over the last 5 years is when, I think it was CNN, had Ron Paul and Ralph Nader on together. And it was a love fest. And Wolf Blitzer, whichever talking head was there, was trying to get them to talk about their disagreements, and they wouldn't take the bait. They kept saying, no, but we agree on it. We hate the corporate state. We hate the warfare state. We hate the spying. And, Wolf or whatever would say, well, yeah, but what about the minimum wage? They didn't want to talk about that. Yeah. They wanted to talk about what they agreed on. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and it ought to be, and this is the reason maybe why it's extra scary to him too, is because it ought to at least be easy to get people to come together about, look, never mind what we want to do to each other for a minute. Let's just agree about what to stop doing, right? Let's stop the spying. Let's stop the bombing Middle Easterners. Let's stop, whatever world empire behavior. Let's stop militarizing the police and imprisoning everybody with a joint in their pocket and all of that kind of stuff. And then you get people to rally around that. And then later on, when the emergency of America accidentally becoming a totalitarian society is, over and we prevent that, then we can fight about exactly, who gets a cost of living adjustment for their Social Security check or whatever the hell kind of, demunicipalizing garbage service or whatever it is, right? And put that stuff off till after.
No, that's right. That's right. And I'm hoping the Naderites and those types will discover that these things that this sort of center left makes such a big deal of, like the minimum wage, is in fact a way to shut up low income people. Throw them a few little crumbs, even though in the end it destroys jobs or makes jobs less attractive than they even were before. But it doesn't do anything structural. It doesn't really go at the structural stuff, the injustices, like all occupational licensing and all the stuff that lock out low-income people from having alternatives to wage labor. Instead, they say, don't worry. Through Washington, we'll raise your hourly wage. We'll raise the minimum wage. And this is just a way of putting people to sleep, saying, we're being taken care of. And so nobody talks about the real stuff that matters, like all these things that lock poor people and low-income people out of, off, kicks them off the road to self-advancement. So I'm hoping the more principled left is going to understand that, and maybe by hanging out with libertarians, they'll begin to see it.
Well, you know, we got this thing going for us, too, about the business cycle theory, where everybody else is just wrong about what causes these terrible disruptions in the economy all the time. And it's so hard on the poor. And, I mean, you think about, I don't know, man, I'm not much of a sociologist or whatever. I do foreign policy. But just think about the tears in the fabric of our people or whatever, as you just have, I don't know the numbers of hundreds of thousands of businesses go bankrupt and families destroyed and kids in foster care and guys eating their pistols and, you know, all for what, when it totally doesn't have to be that way at all. When it's just government intervention in the economy and screwing around that makes it that way. That makes it where it might as well be a crime to save a little bit of money. How is a poor person ever supposed to get ahead if they can't save anything without losing to inflation, you know, overnight? And it's just, you know, I don't know. It seems like you don't have to agree with us on anything else to understand that it's the central bank manipulating things that makes it the way it is with this boom and the bust, a shock to the system every few years like this, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Right, the people you're talking about are also the first to lose jobs when there's a recession after a bubble, you know, that's been blown up by federal policy one way or another. And then the jobs don't come back, and so there's a, you know, essentially a jobless quote unquote recovery, and who's hurt worst of all? But that's the result of an alliance of government and banking, you know, big business. It's hardly a product of the free market. We know darn well it's not, because there's no free market. It can't be a product of the free market if there isn't a free market.
Yeah.
But so what we need to do in reaching out to again principled leftists is we need to get them to see that, you know, even if they disagree with our analysis, it's a good faith analysis that has something behind it. I mean, and we can argue about it, but you know what you see that's so ugly toward the two, you know, the right and the left as you move toward the center is you know, they can never see that their adversaries are arguing in good faith. I mean, if you watch Fox or if you watch MSNBC. Everybody assumes that if you don't agree with me, you're evil incarnate.
Right. Well, and you know, that's part of my problem too, because I figure all state power is aggression, and aggression is evil, and all of these people got 10 million policies that they're for, which makes them pretty all, you know, almost everybody beyond the pale to me. But then again, I have my priorities. And so, you know, it seems like if we could try to get them to stop doing the worst first. But, you know, the left-right divide, it was the South Park about the Iraq War, which I think they only ever did one about the Iraq War. But it was about the divide here at home, and it was just country versus rock and roll is all it was. It was like city people versus country people. You know, whether you say y'all or whether you don't, that was the difference, whether between you're pro-war or not. And ultimately, like, that's basically true. That was the difference between whether you're pro-torture or not was, well, did the Republicans tell you that you're pro-torture? Good, then you are. Or did the Republicans tell you that you're pro-torture? Good, then you're not, because you're not whatever they say. And so, and then that the divide is that simple. Like, it's not even rich and poor. You got country club people and working class people. If they just kind of feel more country music-y, then they're Republicans, and it's kind of just as simple as that. These decisions are made by the vaguest of impressions, not by any of these life or death, all important policy decisions at all. You know?
Yeah.
That's the real bummer.
Well, I'm looking forward to more signs of hysteria from the Walensis, because I think
they'll be successful to a degree of convincing people. You know, people want to believe that kind of crap, or I don't know. It doesn't seem like it went over that well so far, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to resonate. I mean, outside of the narrow establishment circles, but let them keep doing that, because I think that in the end that helps us. First of all, it exposes our work to new eyes, and they'll click on some of the links and go see what we're saying, and I think that's only to the good. Let them read it.
Well, Sheldon, I'm sorry I talked so much. I should have asked you a bunch of questions about the security state, because you wrote a great piece about that, The Surveillance State Lives, also at fff.org, that I hope people will go and take a look at. But now I got to go, because it's time to interview Gareth again.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for your time, Sheldon. Appreciate it. Everybody, that is the heroic Sheldon Richman, the plumb line, the most libertarian man in the universe. And that's according to Anthony Gregory, who's second place, so.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new project, Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. They've got two new audiobooks read by the deepest voice in libertarianism, the great historian Jeff Riggenbach. Our Last Hope, Rediscovering the Lost Path to Liberty by Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center is available now. And Beyond Democracy, co-authored by Frank Karsten of the Mises Institute Netherlands and journalist Carl Beckman, will be released this month. And they're only just getting started. So check out listenandthink.com. You may be able to get your first audiobook absolutely free. That's Listen and Think Audio at listenandthink.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richman, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. What was the only interest group in D.C. pushing war with Syria last summer? AIPAC and the Israel lobby. What's the only interest group in D.C. pushing to sabotage the nuclear deal with Iran right now? AIPAC and the Israel lobby. Why doesn't the president force an end to the occupation of Palestine, a leading cause of terrorist attacks against the United States? AIPAC and the Israel lobby. The Council for the National Interest is pushing back, putting America first and educating the people about what's really at stake in the Middle East. Help support their important work at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.